Among the new shows in this fall's television season is a remake of a classic, The Twilight Zone. Premiering this Wednesday on UPN, the new Twilight Zone faces the daunting challenge of trying to duplicate a program that left an indelible mark on American culture. As part of Morning Edition's series Present at the Creation, NPR's Lynn Neary recalls the original Twilight Zone.
For millions, The Twilight Zone was a weekly appointment with fear. It began with that insidious music that eventually became synonymous with the very idea of weird. And with that narrator, a grim-faced guy with a clenched jaw and deadly serious delivery.
You're traveling through another dimension. A dimension not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of imagination. That's the signpost up ahead. Your next stop, The Twilight Zone.
The narrator, of course, was Rod Serling, the creator and chief writer of The Twilight Zone. A three-time Emmy Award winner for television dramas such as Requiem for a Heavyweight, Serling had a reputation as a serious writer with a liberal agenda who often clashed with censors and sponsors.
Twilight Zone was really born out of frustration and fascination.
Carolyn Serling says Twilight Zone came at a time when her husband was fed up with the compromises television demanded. He turned to science fiction because he felt it would give him the freedom to write about things that mattered to him.
He had said, you know, you can put these words into the mouth of a Martian and get away with it, where if it was a Republican or a Democrat, they couldn't say it. I mean, he wanted to deal with the issues of the day. I mean, we're looking at bigotry and racism, prejudice, nuclear war, ethics, witch hunts, loneliness, all of those things were verboten.
The idea for Twilight Zone first surfaced in a script Rod Serling wrote in college. Called The Time Element, it was the story of a man who went back in time to Pearl Harbor just before the Japanese attacked.
You off a ship?
That's your life. The best baby afloat.
The Arizona.
What?
The Arizona.
The Arizona? When did they dredge her out of the mud?
You're talking about my ship. She's never been close to the mud.
Later, Serling rewrote the script as a pilot for Twilight Zone and sent it to CBS. But the network, wary of both science fiction and Serling, shelved it. Finally, in November 1958, The Time Element aired on the Desilu Playhouse and got more response than any other show that season. CBS ordered a new pilot. Mark Scott Zickrey, author of The Twilight Zone Companion, says Serling was determined to get the show on the air.
So Serling wrote a second script, which was called The Happy Place, which took place in a totalitarian society of the future, where when people turn 60, they're sent away to camps, which are called The Happy Place, where they are routinely exterminated. And CBS read this and said, we're not going to make this. Are you out of your mind, Rod? But this is where Serling had the vision and had the tenacity. Because he said, okay, he didn't argue. He sat down and he wrote a third pilot. And this was Where Is Everybody?
The pilot is about a man who finds himself alone in a deserted town. But everywhere he goes, there are signs that people have been around. Coffee percolates in the local cafe. A cigar sits smoking on the sheriff's desk. At one point, he gets stuck in a phone booth, and no one responds to his calls for help.
All right, who's the wise guy who locked the door? It's a great gag. How about a hand, somebody? A little assistance, how about it? This is an absolutely hysterical town, and I'm growing very fond of it. This isn't funny anymore.
Actor Earl Holliman starred in the pilot.
I remember, you know, being very, like, walking into the jail, and the door starts closing behind me, and the water's running, and this thing. I mean, I remember feeling a sense of the fear, you know, of not understanding and what the hell is going on here.
Serling took few risks with the pilot. Unlike the Twilight Zones of the future, where Serling left much to the imagination, the ending of Where's Everybody was unambiguous. The man was merely taking part in a military experiment about the effects of isolation. His experience in the town was nothing more than a dream. Holliman had an idea for an ending that would suggest that his character's experiences, like the one in the phone booth, had really happened.
My suggestion to Rod was, wouldn't it be interesting if he tears a page out of the phone book and, you know, and ends up, sticks it in his pocket. And at the end of the show, when they discovered this whole thing took place in his mind, if this page of paper falls out of his pocket and the camera goes in, then that would have been ambiguous, you know? And Rod said, no, they won't go for it.
Serling fully understood the limits of the imagination of studio executives and sponsors, Time and again, he'd been forced to make changes, both big and small, in his scripts. Not long before he began work on The Twilight Zone, he fought one of his toughest battles, and lost. Serling had written a script based on the story of Emmett Till, a young black man who had been lynched in the South. The sponsors made Serling change the victim to an old man who lived in the East. During an interview with Mike Wallace, just before Twilight Zone went on the air, Serling insisted that his new show wouldn't deal with such difficult issues.
Somebody asked me the other day if this means that I'm going to be a meek conformist. And my answer is no, I'm just acting the role of a tired nonconformist. And I don't want to fight anymore. I don't want to have to battle sponsors and agencies. I don't want to have to push for something that I want and have to settle for second best. I don't want to have to compromise all the time.
I think Serling was very deliberately in that interview not waving a red flag in front of the bulls that he knew were watching that show.
Writer Mark Scott Zickrey.
I think Serling was very deliberately saying, I'm not going to do anything controversial, so he'd be allowed to be subversive in his writing in a subtle way. The thing that's fascinating about that interview is that Mike Wallace is essentially saying, well, I guess since you're going to be writing science fiction and fantasy, we can assume you're never going to say anything important again. And because prior to that, science fiction shows on television were kid stuff, and they weren't, it wasn't a powerful tool of the author's voice.
Serling's careful strategy for launching Twilight Zone worked. The show debuted in October 1959. By the beginning of the next season, episodes such as The Eye of the Beholder went on air, with no questions asked. In it, Serling explores the idea of state-sponsored conformity to an ideal of beauty, in the story of a young woman who's undergoing surgery to correct a hideous deformity.
One of the alternatives, just in the event that this last treatment is not successful, this is simply to allow you to move into a special area in which people of your kind have been congregated.
People of my kind? Congregated? Oh, you mean segregated? You ain't in prison, don't you, Doctor? You're talking about a ghetto, aren't you? A ghetto designed for freaks.
The twist is that once the woman's bandages are removed, we realize that she is beautiful, while everyone around her is hideous.
Now the questions that come to mind. Where is this place and when is it? What kind of world where ugliness is the norm and beauty the deviation from that norm? You want an answer? The answer is it doesn't make any difference. Because the old saying happens to be true. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. In this year or 100 years hence, on this planet or wherever there is human life, perhaps out amongst the stars, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Lesson to be learned in the Twilight Zone.
The Twilight Zone lasted 5 seasons. By the time it went off the air in 1964, society was on the brink of radical change. Soon there would be few taboos in television, but Rod Serling's adept use of science fiction, his end run around those who would censor him, would long be remembered for some of the best stories that television has ever offered. Lynn Neary, NPR News, Washington.